WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and joining us now is author Kelly Sundberg, and her new book must have been very, very hard for her to write, and we'll hear how difficult for her to talk about. Women and critics are singing the praises of this new memoir, Goodbye, Sweet Girl, A Story of Domestic Violence and Survival. It's an intimate and obviously candid portrayal of a woman fighting to free herself from an abusive marriage. Roxane Gay called the memoir gripping, and Kelly Sundberg joins us now in our studio. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
First, as some people may ask themselves right off the bat just hearing the title, why write a memoir of an abusive relationship?
When I left my ex-husband, I was a writer already, and so I kind of sought meaning in stories. And I was still very confused about what had happened to me. So I looked online. I looked for stories that looked like mine, because what I was experiencing was that though I knew it was abuse, I was still in love with him. And it was really hard for me to grasp the cognitive dissonance that was happening there. So as time went on and I started to kind of understand more what had happened and that my experience of loving my abuser was actually completely normal, I decided to write about it because I felt like if I hadn't found that story, probably other survivors also hadn't found that story.
Because it's so common for women in abusive relationships to stay in those relationships because they also love the guy.
Exactly. I think that too often in survival narratives, the villain is absolutely a villain. The victim is absolutely a victim. And while that's a simple portrayal and oftentimes true, there can be more complicated stories of abuse. So I really wanted to show it would be easy for me to retroactively write my ex-husband as always a villain. But the truth was he wasn't. He was often very nurturing, often very kind, often very supportive. And conversely, I could do all kinds of things wrong within the partnership too. And that is not to say that the abuse was justified. I just wanted to complicate the narrative and offer it more nuance.
And your husband, Caleb, before the abuse occurred, you portray him as gentle and you compared him to your father. You felt connected to him. Doesn't seem like he's going to be a man who would turn to violence. So I'm curious what your story says about how domestic abuse begins and then escalates.
Well, yeah, in the book, I wanted to show that domestic abuse often starts with what a lot of survivors call the sheen, where the abuser does seem like the perfect dream person. Even the language that my husband was using, stuff like, I feel like your body was fit for mine. It sounds so cheesy looking back, but at the time, it felt like I was being handed this kind of romance narrative that I had internalized as a child and that I had desired. And that's a very common in abusive situations. And the abuse happens later after that sheen has already been instilled. And then what happens is the women who are experiencing the abuse, and it's not just women. And I also want to point out that POC and trans populations and queer populations are more vulnerable to domestic violence than just women, white women. But I wanted to show that we fight to get back to that dream, because dreams are so powerful. Dreams can be every bit as powerful as reality.
And so you're right. I wanted to forget his violence and love him through my fear. I wanted my compassion to be enough to spare him any more pain. So with that sentence, you show that you were thinking about his pain, not just your pain, even though you were being physically abused.
Yeah, and I think that's a common narrative with women in our country. I think that, and the reason in my book I showed my hometown and the upbringing that I was raised with so much was that I wanted to show that forgiveness, and women's forgiveness in particular, was seen as this virtue that would make someone worthy of love. And so I thought that in order to be someone who was worthy of love, I had to be capable of forgiving the most egregious behavior. And it took a long time for me to realize that that wasn't the case.
And this is obviously a deeply personal account of your life and marriage. And some of the other things that come up include abortion, abduction, rape. You write about the flaws of your parents as well. What was sort of the most difficult thing for you to actually reveal that you decided to reveal?
There were two things that I would say were equally difficult. It was difficult for me to write about the loving moments, because that was painful. Because I think anything that accompanies the end of a marriage is grief. And so a lot of residual grief came up. But the hardest part to reveal, and the chapter that I sat on and then finally ended, was the chapter titled, I Just Don't Know What to Believe. And it was about my father saying to me, Kelly, I just don't know what to believe. And I didn't want to reveal that in the book, because I have a very loving father, a very supportive father.
Alive.
And he is more supportive than most people's fathers. But I felt that I couldn't tell an abuse narrative correctly without showing that sometimes even our most loving supporters disbelieve us.
Didn't believe that you were being, that you were being abused. What did he believe?
I think he thought I was being hyperbolic, that I was exaggerating, or that I was fickle and just changed my mind and should have stuck the marriage out and made it work. And I did. I did try. And he knows that now, and we're still very close. But it was a very hard lesson for both of us.
How about your mother at the time?
My mother was actually really supportive. And I think in the book I show that my relationship with my mother was more contentious when I was a child. But when I left my ex-husband, my mother's the one who stepped up to the plate and really became my big supporter and my big cheerleader. And I think that, if anything, I'm trying to show there that no one is really bound by the narrative that they start out with, that we're all capable of becoming better or different people.
So this also goes back to your childhood and your upbringing?
Yes, I talk a lot about my childhood and my upbringing. I grew up in rural Idaho. I don't think in modern literature we see a lot of representations of rural America. And I was very influenced by having such a rural upbringing, by the religious institutions that were in that town. And that influenced why I think I later had a tendency to make excuses for the bad behavior of men and how I became who I am.
What was your particular religious context?
Well, my family was Lutheran, but my community was predominantly LDS. And so there was just an experience of...
That's Mormon, right?
Yeah, Mormon. And I don't want to stereotype, but it was just a community where women had certain roles and men had certain roles. And it could be a struggle to try to fit into those roles.
And you write about loneliness, self-esteem, mental health. Those are big categories, but you've had to inspect sort of your psychology to figure out your relationship with your husband during the abusive period, and then it generalized to your relationships with other people?
Yeah, I really had to excavate my own psyche in writing this book, and it was difficult. I have a friend who's an exposure therapist, and she said, you know, in a way, you're doing exposure therapy right now. And I don't think that writing a book is therapy, but the benefit did end up, I learned a lot about myself that I didn't expect. And I started out writing this book as a way to try to tell the story of abuse. And what I realized in the process was that while I was being abused, the story was no longer mine. And in the process of writing the abuse, I took the story back and I made it into my own story.
How much did your early experience that you write about of maturing faster than many of your peers when you were, you know, going into adolescence and getting the attention of men early and almost being abducted by a man, as you described, did all this taint your idea of sex and love?
I think it absolutely did. I think it made me seek out things that seemed like they had clear definitions, because I was still very much a girl, but it was obvious to me that I was being sexualized by men. And so I became really uncertain of relationships that didn't have very clear boundaries and kind of clear gender roles. And so when I was seeking that out with my husband, it did seem like it was a relationship that I felt was clear.
The gender roles were very clear. And by this, I don't know, is that an indictment of sort of traditional femininity and traditional masculinity, and a warning sign to other women who may want that similar kind of clarity?
Yeah, I think he was someone who wanted to be the provider, who wanted to be the successful one in the relationship, who wanted to fill that role. And I actually didn't want that, but thought that was what was expected of me. So worked to make that happen within the marriage. And in the process, I was unhappy, and my unhappiness made him angry.
That's also a script from your upbringing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And it was really important to me to include the childhood stuff in the book, because I don't think I can separate the way I was enculturated and the way that I behaved during the marriage and the way that I am now, though I've worked really hard to separate the person I am now from the person I was then.
I presume you were writing this memoir already before the Me Too movement broke out last fall.
I finished it before the Me Too movement. Yeah, I turned it in, the final draft, in August before that. So I'm actually really glad I finished it before the Me Too movement, because the Me Too movement was really traumatizing for me. And I mean, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. But I think a lot of survivors were watching this litany of stories coming out. And while it was cathartic, it was painful too.
We were talking in the previous segment how the Me Too movement has made people look back 20 years at Monica Lewinsky in a different kind of way than they might have before that. As intense as your experience was, and the fact that you had already completed a book about it, has the Me Too movement of the recent months made you look at your own situation any differently even still?
It has. And what I've noticed is that as intense as my own experience was, it's not as unusual as people think. And I think people really tend to treat me like I have this terrible story, but it's a pretty common story. And even the book doesn't really get physically violent until towards the end. And I think the psychological abuse that is happening early on in the book would be really useful for anyone to read, because there is a spectrum of abuse and it's not all physical.
In our last 30 seconds, what's a good example of that?
Of psychological abuse? Gaslighting. I think so much the book was a story of gaslighting, of me saying this happened and him saying that didn't happen. And then as a result, I questioned my reality.
He said things that happened didn't happen.
Yes.
Just to talk you out of reporting them?
Well, no, I would say, well, I'm upset because you said this. And he would say, I didn't say that. And it's simple, but it makes you feel crazy over time.
Kelly Sundberg's new book is called Goodbye, Sweet Girl, A Story of Domestic Violence and Survival. And she'll be doing an in-person appearance tonight with Guernica Editor-in-Chief Hillary Brenhouse. That's at the Word Bookstore in Brooklyn, 126 Franklin Street. Again, that's 7:30 tonight. Thank you so much for coming and sharing this with us.
Thank you so much.